one and all once again to a galaxy far, 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 far away. Welcome to the George Ootcast.
Yes!
Yes!
The greatest name ever!
For Star Wars Episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back, I am joined this week by Scott.
He's no good to me, dead.
And Tony.
Sorry, I had to.
Why did you cut out? I was going to say something. You just ran over my thunder. Oh, well, I'm here too. Hi, guys. God. Life is so hard.
Life ain't easy being green. I don't know how to kick this movie off. I will say the same thing I said about the last one, is if nothing else, the original trilogy really knows how to just get you into the movie. There's no here's what happened in the intro before movies. It's like, they're at an outpost hiding from the Empire, and then a massive battle ensues.
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things I really like about Star Wars, is that at its core, it's so simple. It's like, in this, as you said, the opening scroll for these movies, like this one in particular, is a couple sentences. When I'm not actively watching the movie and I'm just reflecting on the opening scrolls for these, in my mind, I imagine them being so much more in depth and longer than they are. But in reality, it's just like, hey, we're hiding out on this planet and the bad guys are after us. Okay. That's it, here's the movie. And I'm like, oh, that's it? Okay, cool. So it's like, it's so simple, but at the same time, the universe of Star Wars is so insanely vast. So it's pretty cool how they're able to balance the two of those.
Yeah, and so. I will say this much, and we'll touch on this more when we get to them, but it was one of those things that dawned on me watching Empire Strikes Back this time. It's one of the things that the prequel franchise hurts by is that there's no kind of background conflict. Like you hear about the Rebel Alliance versus the Empire throughout these movies, but that's not really what you focus on. You focus on this small group and kind of how they intersect, but you know that there's a bigger thing going on behind them. That's why you can
there was big things going on in the prequels, you know, like trade agreements and stuff.
Yeah, you bring up a good point, though.
No, that was a joke. I was joking. That was terrible.
Well, no, I meant Earl, but...
Oh, okay.
I was gonna say that in Empire Strikes Back, A New Hope, Return of the Jedi, you know that there's this chaos going on in the background where the Rebel Alliance is trying to either basically just hold out against the Empire or is just running. That's it. But even in episode 3 with Revenge of the Sith, you kind of get the hint that there's like stuff going on everywhere else, but you don't really like care. It doesn't really matter because you basically are told that it's like, oh, it's a stalemate. Who really cares? We just need to do this one mission and we'll win, which is the one where they go to get General Grievous. And that's, you know, that's all you're supposed to care about, so that's all they really focus on. They don't really reference anything else, but even if they did, it would feel not important, because they put all the stakes there.
Yeah, but, you know, it makes for an interesting backdrop, but then again, like I said, they know to limit the scope, and, you know, as the franchise goes on, and again, this is part of the problem with the prequel trilogy, is that with the original, they kind of understood their budget. Like, the big blowout in this movie is the start of the film, and then everything's kind of smaller. Like, the climax itself is a one-on-one fight.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, and also, it's kind of to touch on that as well, like, there are so many set pieces in this film. Like, you talk about the opening, you know, the opening of the film takes place on Hoth, and there's the big battle and all that stuff. So it's like, you've got all these cool set pieces. You have Hoth, you have the Dagobah system, you've got what was Lando Calrissian's planet that he was on?
Bespin.
Bespin, yeah, you've got Bespin. You've got, so there's all these different big set, not really, well, Hoth was a pretty big set piece, but the other, there's very, very distinguishing locations in this film. Like, I feel like the universe really opened up in this one. And when comparing it to A New Hope, you know, A New Hope was very straightforward. Like, sure, they had their, you know, different locations, you know, like the desert and all that. But this is just like, they really expanded the universe big in this film. Like, it really opened up, I feel like.
Which is kind of funny, because they go smaller with the next, well, not the next one for us, but the Return of the Jedi, because that's pretty much focused on a single planet for most of the film. But we'll get to that when we get to that.
Yeah.
Oh, God. That planet. That planet, though. that also has to do with how these movies were written, you know, and it's often been talked about how, you know, a movie is generally written in three acts, right? You have the three act system. So, but in the case of the original Star Wars trilogy, the three movies were written like three acts. So, you know, in the second movie, you have the second act where everything is really opening up and you're exploring the conflict of the characters and all that, and it's really expanding. The first movie, A New Hope, is kind of just introducing, you know, all the pieces of the puzzle. This one's really, really opening it all up, and of course, then at the end, you have the conclusion and all that, the climax. So,
yeah. So, yes, The Empire Strikes Back starts off on the ice planet of Hoth. We start with Luke being captured by a Space Yeti.
Space Yeti.
And the Wampa, for those who were wondering.
Not to be confused with a Womp Rat, which he used to bullseye.
Did they show what those words?
Did they back home. That?
Did they show what words?
Womp Rat.
No, I don't think so.
He just mentions it, right?
Yeah, apparently he's like a freaking psychopath because he was murdering these animals back home just for kicks. Jeez.
That explains his dark side tendencies.
That way, he does sound like
Luke's a sociopath. He's over here like, yeah, you know, I used to just freaking bullseye these Womp Rats back home for kicks, so I can murder all the people in this Death Star, no problem. Like, wow, geez, Luke, seriously? You need some counseling, man.
I also believe that this scene introduces, I could be wrong, I'm not the biggest Star Wars fan, as you two prove, week in and week out. This introduces the Force being able to move stuff?
That it does. I don't think they didn't do that in a.
They didn't do that in A New Hope.
Well, in A New Hope, no. Obi-Wan does kind of like wave his hand, and something happens, and stormtroopers turn away. I don't know if that was messing with their minds, or he.
Oh, that's right.
Made,
yeah.
Or he made a noise behind them by like moving something. But this is the first time that you have seen, like cause and effect, like definite, like
right.
He was moving this with his mind.
Okay, and I bring that up because it plays into part of his training during the middle part of the movie, and it also plays into the big climactic fight between him and Vader.
Right.
Go on.
Oh, no, so you were saying, so they use the Force to move Luke's lightsaber when he's captured by the Wampa or whatever.
Yeah.
So, which is weird because you think the thing would just, like, eat him, but apparently it was like, I'm going to hang you like a chandelier. You're going to be decoration for my crib.
I was actually kind of curious about that. Maybe he was saving it, because he was eating when we see him. He just has Luke hanging up there, but he is eating.
He's eating the tauntaun.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah, that's a good point. So what was he saving Luke for? I guess for later. I don't know.
Yeah, like maybe if he has a snack. But.
Yeah, I was going to say a midnight snack in case he gets hungry before sunrise. So he's like, I'll just save this guy for later. Hang him up here like a slab of meat.
I was going to say, he should have killed him, though.
I'm sure the Wampa doesn't have access to a steady supply of food because of the ice planetness of it.
Yeah, the fact that there's no other living creatures on the planet.
Yeah, like, the only things that we see are the Rebel Alliance, like, maybe four Tauntauns and the Wampa, so maybe he was saving him for, like, next week.
Yeah,
right.
Still should have killed him. But I guess if you want fresh food, you have to keep it alive.
That's a good point. You know what? That makes a lot of sense.
You gotta preserve.
Anyways, so after the fact, Luke's captured. Han goes out looking for his boy. Even though like sun's gonna set and it's gonna get super cold, and he's like, "No, I gotta go, you know, save Luke."
I'll see you in hell.
Yeah.
And this is something else I was a bit confused by, because they made in the first movie Han's pretty much in it, or Han, if you're Ando.
Right.
Yep.
Hey, Lando can call him whatever he wants to call him.
Or maybe we should call him Lando. But
Lando's such a bad dude. He can say whatever he wants.
Yeah, very so. I mean, it's this is the Princess Leia of this movie where he's just like,
oh, Leia, Princess Leia.
They always got to pronounce someone's name wrong.
At least they stuck to one pronunciation this time, I think, for her name. Though not many people say it. It's usually like Princess or Your Highness.
Mm-hmm. Right. Which or your Worshipfulness.
Yes, which she actually calls Han on at some point in the film.
The beginning.
Right.
Yeah. But yeah.
She's not calling him Scoundrel.
I was going to say that.
Or Scruffy Looking.
Scruffy Looking Nerf Herder.
Who are you calling scruffy looking?
But yeah, he was in it for the money, and at the start of this movie, it seems like he's heading out as well. So why is he still around?
That's a good question. One that we will ignore.
I guess it depends on how soon after the end of episode 4 is the beginning of episode 5. Like, how much time has passed?
3 years.
According to
Wikipedia.
No, not how long till the film came out. I mean, how long in the storyline? Like, did this occur
3 years
directly?
That's
really
the answer. Yeah.
So what the heck is Han doing?
That's what I just asked.
Well, I assumed it happened like right after the fact. So no, I figured,
I figured it didn't, because especially being that Han and Luke have standing in the army now. Where the commanders or captain.
I guess, like, yeah.
But
so,
at the start of the movie, he's also leaving. So, I was
so
like,
how is Han
yet?
Yeah, he's all like, oh, bro, I gotta go. I've got like a bounty on my head. It's like, dude, you've had a bounty on your head for 3 years. What are you doing?
Maybe Princess Leia got to him. Maybe Luke got to him. He stuck around to help.
You know what it was, man? He was playing his cards, man. He wanted to see how Leia would react. He's like, look, babe, I gotta go. Just as, you know, sometimes you gotta do that, man. Sometimes you gotta...
reacted by making out with her brother, which you'll get to.
That's so awkward.
And I'll pose the same question I posed last time. Because if he knew that they were going to be brothers and sisters in this movie, why do that?
I don't know. But I know whenever I watch the movie, I can't. I have to look away at that scene. I'm like, oh, I can't watch. It's so gross. Meanwhile, you know, George Lucas is sitting in the dark corner just watching it like, yes, kiss him, do it. It's like, whoa, Jesus, George.
Because you know he knows. He knows.
Because he introduces, and now this doesn't really pay off in any meaningful manner. Like, when Luke leaves the planet, when he's training with Yoda, he's like, there is another.
Do you think that Luke, when Leia kissed him, part of him was like, "Yeah, something seems wrong here."
He seemed to enjoy it.
Was there a disturbance in his force?
Nope. There was a disturbance somewhere, but it wasn't the force.
There was a disturbance in my pants.
This is a great Star Wars pickup line.
There's a disturbance in my pants. That's terrible. Anyways, back to the movie.
Yeah, so, I mean, we are pretty much at the movie where, I mean, Han rescues Luke, and then he says he's leaving again, and
right. He's
like, you just want me to stay, and that's when she kisses Luke to prove that she doesn't have feelings for him. And
so she doesn't have feelings for Han.
Yeah.
But then the probe droid, and then...
And this goes back to a point one of you made with the first film. If they didn't destroy the probe, they wouldn't have been found out.
Mm-hmm. That's basically. Or definitely not as fast, and yeah. they would have been able to have been like, oh, there's an Imperial probe droid around. We've got to make preparations before he discovers us.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
And again, another one of those moments where it's like, because when the probe droid was destroyed, then they cut back to, you know, the bad guys, and one of the dudes is like, oh, no, let's ignore it. It's like, what? No! Stop ignoring things! Every time you ignore something, the good guys get away. Like,
what are you
doing
for here?
Well, I'm saying, how do these guys get to this level of, you know, power in the government, and yet they're so incompetent? I think I just answered my own question.
I was about to say, you've never worked a government job.
That's true. Never mind. You know what? Forget what I just said. It all makes sense.
So they found out an Empire attacks, and it's actually kind of the action scene is really fun, but it's kind of a fun cat and mouse game, because as the Empire is making their way onto the planet, they're pretty much using their entrance as a cover to get off the planet.
Right. Yeah, it's like a, like I can imagine the Benny Hill music playing, you know? Where it's like, or like it's a scene from Scooby-Doo where the bad guy is chasing them in the hallway, and they're going in one door and then coming out the other door, and the bad guy's running the opposite way, and then they're just constantly missing each other. It's that whole thing.
Yeah, pretty much.
And to play more into that, apparently there's a deleted scene where C-3PO takes the sign off a door and it has like a Wampa symbol on it. And a stormtrooper wanders in and gets mauled by a Wampa off screen.
Get out of here.
Pretty sure, unless this was like really great fake that I saw on YouTube. Yeah.
That would be incredible. If that's true, that's amazing. Then that totally fits what I just said. Mm-hmm. It's just a comedy of errors.
I was like, it's like, yeah, like that it is like that. Especially with C-3PO proving that he's actually kind of heartless.
He's a terrible, terrible person.
Well, he's not a person.
That's true. That's like when Han said to crap name big fat guy.
Any more Jabba?
Jabba, yes. I kept wanting to say Jar Jar.
No,
Jabba. And when he tells him you're a wonderful human being. And it's like, he's not a human being at all. So yeah,
C-3- can't be wonderful.
C-3PO is a terrible human being.
He really is.
Yeah.
Okay, so my other question, because apparently this is all this podcast exists for me to get these hard-pressed Star Wars questions answered. When did Darth Vader figure out Luke's name?
Officially? Oh, when did he learn his first name? Is what you're saying?
No, because he keeps on saying, "I just want Solo. I just want Skywalker."
The Emperor told him. The Emperor said the Emperor said that he's the offspring of Anakin Skywalker.
Did he?
Yeah.
Did I miss a scene?
Yeah, you must have the scene where the only scene where you see the Emperor in this movie.
I will be honest. I watched this over two nights because I had stuff to do. And it wasn't, it didn't get my...
It's the scene where the big holographic display of the Emperor, and Darth Vader's kneeling in front of it, and the Emperor's like, there's a great disturbance in the Force. I have felt it. We have a new enemy. A young Jedi. You know, it goes on.
Okay.
Yeah. And he tells him he's the offspring of Anakin Skywalker, and then he says that we must destroy him, and then that's when Darth Vader's like, well, what if we make him our ally or whatever? You know, if we can turn him, he'll be a powerful ally. And which is an interesting thing for him to say, because it's like, do you think he probably said that because now knowing that Luke is his son, that he was like, you know, hey, man, I don't want to kill my son. Maybe we can turn him, you know?
It was, I think that's exactly what it is.
I mean, that is pretty much what happened in the next movie.
Right, well, yeah. But even in this one, though, because when he does finally have his showdown with Luke, he, you know, tells him that, you know, we can destroy the Emperor and we can rule the galaxy as father and son. So in his own twisted way, he's
every father wants for their kid is for them to
remain
side by side.
I mean, that's how I feel about all my many, many illegitimate children is, you know.
Hey, he was happily married. He just happened to kill his wife in some really weird logic thing that we'll get to in a few minutes.
She's lost her will to fight and live. Boo.
What a terrible mother.
But yes, the Battle of Hoth introduced the AT-ATs. Which
yeah, your job in this podcast is to keep us on track, is to help us stay on target.
Which is actually stay on really target. Funny. Not funny, I shouldn't say funny, but it's actually really clever because it makes use of stop motion that looks pretty stop motion-y, but it makes sense because they just make them really show but menacing enemies. Like, it'd be awful if they were impervious and they ran a Mach 7 or something like that.
Wait, stop motion for what, the AT-ATs?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I'm just grabbing another beer. I don't know about you guys, but
stop.
Don't mind me. Carry on.
But yeah, I mean, you can see the animation they really show and mechanical, but it works out in their it works out in the favor of the movie because it makes them really menacing, and they are really, really difficult to beat.
But of course, how do they beat them? But with the old Benny Hill tactic, they tie their shoelaces together.
Which kind of makes you question, why did those speeders have grappling hooks to begin with?
I mean, they were tow cables. So
yeah, the tow cables.
I guess if you ever need to tow anything, I don't know.
Well, are you going to tow it through the air? Is it still hovering? It just can't move.
You're flying and just dragging another speeder behind you.
Just going through the snow drifts.
Yeah. Maybe. I don't know, man. Why is anything anything?
You're just going to break the internal logic of all these Star Wars films.
It won't be that hard.
But I really like the AT-AT because when you think of the Empire, you either think of the Death Star or maybe stormtroopers, but I always think of the AT-AT, the All-Terrain Assault Transport, as it's also called.
Oh wow, it's also it's a very iconic, you know, vehicle that's used. I mean, especially in this film, and then even. I guess didn't they use them in the next movie?
Yeah, they're a big part of the IMAX.
Yeah, so
yeah, not the next movie for us, but Episode 6.
Right.
Episode 6, yeah, they do show them.
Yeah, and again, it makes for great enemies, and it also makes for great visuals because you do mention like they do tie their feet together, but there's a scene, you know, there's a part where Luke grapples up to one of them and cuts it open and throws a grenade inside of it.
Right. You know what also, what else is kind of interesting to now that I'm thinking about it is the weapons of the Empire to me are kind of representative of how the Empire is. They're this massive, powerful, slow moving thing, you know, kind of like the Death Star or the AT-ATs or, you know, anything like that. So it's this large, intimidating thing, but you have the nimble, agile rebels who are able to outmaneuver and all that.
Yeah, I mean, and it's kind of the falling of the Death Star as well, where they don't necessarily think an individual is a threat, because the Death Star is taken out by a single ship, and these AT are taken out by a single person on foot, because they have no defenses if you aren't a giant vehicle.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, if you're good at bullseyeing womp rats, then you can pretty much destroy the Empire. That's what we learned.
Well, and he does.
But spoilers, I don't know. General Veers...
If you're a sociopathic animal murderer, then you're good. But you were saying General Veers.
General Veers led that attack against the rebels and just crushed them, which proves that once the Empire gets you in their sights and you're not agile enough to get out of the way, you will be mowed over.
Wait, when were they mowed over?
At the Battle of Hoth. I mean, some of them managed to get away, but the base
was... were they really mowed over? Oh, sure, sure.
Every single defensive line fell. They had to completely abandon. I'd consider that getting mowed over.
I think Scott just really wants his team to win.
General Veers, you know, Admiral Piet. These guys are awesome.
I like how you know their names.
What's really funny is how he knows their names, and yet they may have possibly mentioned their names once, maybe, in this movie. So
General Veers, prepare your men. We're going for a ground assault. He said that.
I know, the once.
After Darth Vader force chokes Admiral Ozzel through the display, which is pretty cool, and then he says to Piet that you're now the Admiral since I just killed
superior. It's like that scene in Ghost Dad where he goes through the phone and chokes the guy for hitting on his daughter.
You just brought up Ghost Dad?
You remember that movie? That movie was terrible.
I like how you sit here and next year on these obscure Star Wars characters, and you have a problem that he brings up Ghost Dad.
Ghost Dad is a classic piece of cinema.
That's some freaking poppycock right there.
So you're saying General Veers? Ghost Dad has a 7% on Rotten Tomatoes. I just looked this up.
It's almost like Fantastic Four bad. But anyway, yeah, Hoth, the Empire wins. It's great.
Which will be a key theme throughout this film is that the heroes are pretty much on retreat for the entirety of this film.
Or are presently captured.
Well, I mean, this movie is very much a downer of a movie. And I know we've discussed this before, but people can't hear what we previously discussed because it was not recorded. So this entire
magic of editing.
So this movie is very much a downer of a movie. Like the bad guy, the good guys are. I keep calling the good guys bad guys, but the good guys are constantly losing. As you said, they're always being chased off and beaten, and you know, even at the very end of the movie, everybody's all screwed up and has limbs cut off and frozen in carbonite and on the run. So this is definitely not a happy-go-lucky movie or episode. Unless you're a terrible human being like C-3PO.
No, C-3PO secretly enjoyed it. He loved it.
Yes. So the base is pretty much destroyed, as Scott mentioned, and at somewhere along the line, Zook finds out that there's a Jedi alive who can train him. So
when he gets KO'd by Frosty the Snowman, he has like a vision of old Ben telling him to go to the Dagobah system and, you know, find Yoda, basically.
Yeah, and I used to think that it was weird that they had Ghost Jedi, and then I saw Man of Steel, which Jor-El pretty much exists the entire movie as a ghost in a computer program.
Right,
so,
a ghost in the shell.
Yes, a ghost in the shell. So he goes off to the Dagobah system.
Right.
And Luke and Leia are trying to escape the base, and they pretty much play cat and mouse with the Empire for like half an hour.
Wait, what? Luke and Leia?
No, I mean
Han and Leia.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They take off in the Millennium Falcon or Falcon.
Yeah, the warp drive
is broken
this entire movie.
Yeah, the warp drive never works, so they have to like try to outmaneuver them and stuff. And Han pulls out a couple of cool moves where he, hides in the asteroid field and all that. Honestly, that part of the movie to me was kind of boring. Like, if I'm being honest.
It's crap for the first time, but yeah, after a while, if you know the tricks and the beats, it's not that tense. And
right.
Because it's kind of like a, because it's so isolated, because they're on the ship, and they're on, like, both parties are on the ship, they don't really interact directly, so there isn't a ton of stuff going on, and there isn't any other characters, and
yeah.
Luke's off on his own, but he's doing his own thing as well, and it's just one other character there.
Yeah, I think for me, like, as I was rewatching this movie more critically, as opposed to just, you know, watching it for pure enjoyment, there's definitely a large portion of this film that to me felt slow. And I guess that's what it was supposed to be. You know, like, from the moment they leave Hoth till, I mean, honestly, till, like, pretty much the very end when, you know, Luke goes in to save them on a name.
Wait, what
planet,
was it?
When Luke goes to save them on the planet of...
Bespin.
Bespin, Jesus, God, I really need to, like, get tested for mental issues.
You go to the doctor, like, I can't remember Star Wars characters' names.
It's
terrible. Test for it?
I've been watching these movies, so I really felt like the movie kind of, like, slowed down for a period of time between the Battle of Hoth and when Luke went to save everyone on Bespin. I mean, and I guess it kind of had to be that way, like, because that's when you're going through what I guess would be, like, the training montage in the Rocky movie, you know, where it's like, you know, Luke is training with Yoda, and, I, you know, these Han and Leia are chilling in an asteroid field. I don't know what they're just kind of hanging out the whole time, being bored. I don't know.
I will say this, and maybe I'm wrong, and maybe I read it wrong. And we mentioned this with the first one, where I liked the fact that everything was kind of forward momentum. This film doesn't really have a plot to it. And, like, there isn't something that anybody's after, or there's nothing that everybody's racing for, or there's nothing they're trying to stop.
Right.
So,
well, like, I guess they're just trying to get away, like Han and Leia and them are just trying
really
to...
That's not really a plot.
No.
Like, that's what I mean. That's why, like you said, it kind of feels show in the middle, because it stops and then you realize that there's nothing that anybody's really going for. Like, there's no thing driving the middle of the movie to say, like, okay, if Han and Leia had to get to Luke before the Empire did, or found that way.
Right.
Out,
yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Like, if they were trying to get somewhere specific or accomplish something specific, but instead they're just kind of trying to get away, I guess.
Yeah.
And Luke is
just
kind of chasing a weird dream that he had and just wanting to go, I guess, train to become a Jedi, even though he's not even quite sure why he's going there in the first place. And then once he gets there, and he's like, oh, I want to be a Jedi.
He's pretty much the next night. I mean, the time this movie takes place seems really super condensed. Like, it seems like it takes place over, like, 2 days, 3 days, maybe.
Isn't that weird? Like, because, yeah, his whole training thing, like, you would imagine that would have taken months. But then cuts to Han and Leia, and it's like, no, they actually just went from here to here. So it maybe took a few hours. So.
I mean, I could see maybe a few days if it took him a while to get to Ando's planet, but it doesn't seem like it was that long of a stretch of time in this movie. So it's weird that Luke goes through all of this stuff, and then he's like, oh, I trained for 2 days, Yoda, I'm not getting it, I'm quitting.
Yeah, that is really strange when you think about it, but I don't know, I mean... I guess that doesn't make or break the movie at all.
No,
it's just
kind of funny.
Yeah, it is kind of a weird thing. But I think one thing that definitely does affect my enjoyment of the movie is the fact that it does definitely slump in the middle. You know, that's probably one of my major knocks on this movie. That, for me, like, my major knocks on the movie is that it slumps in the middle, and also that this is the least independent of the three prequels. So as far as you can watch the first movie completely on its own and understand everything that's going on, you don't need any backstory, you know, the third, I guess, you know, maybe it's not the least independent of the three, but it's certainly not as independent as the first movie is, I guess I should say.
It is, because, again, it's a middle chapter. The first one pretty much stands on its own.
Right.
I should say. And the third one has the luxury of being the wrap up, the conclusion of everything. So that
right.
it makes sense to see them all. Huh? But like the third one, it's kind of like, okay, it's a happy ending. You know, there's literally a celebration, a song and dance at the end. This
yeah,
one,
literally,
it's literally kind of, like, again, it's kind of like the first one. It feels like it jumped you into the action by assuming you know what's going on. And it never really gets up. And for good reason, it is a sequel. You should not see the original. You should definitely see the original before
yeah.
you see it.
You know what? I'm going to make a claim. I'm going to say, because I think we all know that a lot of people say that this is their favorite Star Wars movie. A lot of people. Like, it's very common to say that. And I'm going to mm-hmm. go out on a limb here and say that the reason people say that is just because I don't know. They're trying to fit in or be cool or whatever, because I don't think you can honestly watch this and say it's the best Star Wars movie. I think they're just saying it because they're like, oh, I like it because it's the dark one. It's like, yeah, well, you say that because everyone else says that and you just want to be like everybody else. But in reality, I don't think it is.
That's not why I say it, though. I really.
Well, yeah, but you also like Episode 6, so clearly your opinion is way off. I you can't be trusted. I'm sorry, you like Episode 3, I should say.
No,
you like Episode 3, so you're clearly wrong. You clearly have
like
severe
episode,
brain damage.
I don't like Episode 3 more than A New Hope and Empire Strikes Back. And it's really close with Return of the Jedi, but I really. There's certain things about Episode 3 that push it over the edge, over Return of the Jedi for me. But I just really, I kind of just like when the bad guy wins. And, like, it also
right.
helps knowing that,
sure.
you know, just my, like, human side comes through, knowing that, like, yeah, the good guys will probably win. So I, like,
right.
still revel in the small evil victories.
Right. So maybe, you know what, maybe it is more enjoyable to people, but I don't think it's honestly a better film. Like, I don't think the structure of the film, the storytelling and all that, I don't think it's as good as 4. I just don't think it is. I think 4 is a much more complete film. But what do I know?
And that may be true.
I'm just a
that may be
I'm
true.
Just
I won't
a drunk idiot with
I won't try
to memory.
I won't try to argue that Empire Strikes Back is a better movie than New Hope, or is the best.
You shouldn't try to argue. Do or do not. There is no try.
Okay, I won't argue.
Sorry.
I won't. But I will say that doesn't mean that it's not my favorite.
You're right.
Yeah, it's my favorite. I don't think it's the best, necessarily. Because I haven't actually sat down and tried to, like, determine which one's the best movie. But that
right.
You will soon enough.
Right, and that's, neither have I. I'm just doing that as we watch them. Who knows? Like, when I watch Episode 3, I might be like, you know, this isn't so bad. So I don't know. Who knows? I haven't really watched them critically either. I've just watched them for enjoyment, so.
And going back to this movie, I do think one of the things it does better than 4, and it definitely does better than 6, is it has bigger stakes near the end of the movie with the Empire and Han, Leia, and Luke. Actually, for Han and Luke, they never really get to the short end of the stick, I guess, which is a good thing in this case. They don't really seem to be that fussed with her. Like, she's not frozen in carbonite. She doesn't use a hand.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
you know,
that is kind of weird. You would think that the Empire would want her because she's the freaking princess, but
I feel like that's just a title in this universe, because it doesn't, like you said, because when they held her captive in the first movie, it wasn't because she was a princess, it was because she had information they needed. And in this one, they could
true.
Be asked where she is. They don't care. They want Luke.
Yeah, also, she's the princess of a planet that no longer exists.
Yeah, she's like Vegeta.
Yeah,
in Dragon Ball Z, he's the prince of nothing because everyone's dead.
He's the prince of all 4 Saiyans.
So yeah, that's
most
Princess
of which
Leia.
Are half Saiyans. So
and kind of since I'm jumping back and forth on this movie, it sounds like I'm both attacking and praising it.
It's kind of like Ghost Dad. Just kidding. No, no more Ghost Dad references.
I was also going to say, one of the problems with the middle portion of this movie is it's so incidental, because Han and Leia just happened to be in the sector with the Endo's planet, and I guess somehow the Empire figured that out?
Yeah, how did they know that they were going to Bespin?
They arrived before them.
That's what I'm saying. If he followed them, how did he get there first? That doesn't make any sense.
Because Han Solo's warp drive was still disabled.
No, he didn't know that, though.
But he wouldn't know where he was going. He would just, assumed, he's like, oh, he's heading in this direction, so the closest planet in that direction is Bespin. So he's probably going there, and that's the only way it would have worked.
Has a lot of experience bounty hunting, so...
Yeah, it's kind of like the Kessel Run.
Yeah. Well, Boba Fett also knows a lot about Han Solo, because he's been hired by Jabba the Hutt to find him. So, of course, you're going to know, like, past, you know, like, aliases, who he hung out with. So it's like, well, he's headed in Bespin's direction. He's also good friends with Lando, so...
So, in the time that... The time that Han and Leia broke off from the ship, which was actually a pretty smart move. Again, I don't know how these people don't detect anything like this on their ship, but, because the idea was they broke off and they were looking for him, and, like, where could he have gone using the warp speed? And he never used that, so they should be much further out than he is. So in that time, they went away, they found Boba Fett, figured out he was hunting Han, and he led them to that planet before Han and Leia got there when they knew where they were going?
Yeah.
Okay.
Here's the thing that Boba Fett had on his side. Boba Fett had Darth Vader on speed dial, firstly. he also had hyperspace on his side, and combine those two, he gets to Bespin first, or even if he just knows that they're going there, he can call Darth Vader and be like, hey, he's going to Bespin most likely, and then they can just be like, okay, just turn this Star Destroyer around, we'll go right there.
Yeah, but okay, even
it's like
that,
it's like Back to the Future 2, where, no, I'm just kidding. I was gonna say he FedExed himself something from the future. I don't know how that work in that movie. I'm confused.
Yeah, but even with that, like, it's implied that Han and Lando had some type of falling out. They had some type of beef before the movies. So,
oh, yeah. They're both dirtbags, so...
assume that they're he would be bags. Going there to hang out with him.
I don't know, man. It's a movie.
it's a movie, but I'm just trying to figure out the logic of how the Empire knew to be there before. Not only did they know how to be there, they got there before they did.
They used the Force, man. The Force is strong with them.
Well, the Empire may have had other, like, you know, they could have had, it's gigantic. They could have had another Star Destroyer, like, passing Bespin. And it's like, hey, could you just, like, park on Bespin and just, like, take it over real quick before...
But the problem with that is, and this is my absolute favorite visual in the entire movie, maybe the franchise, is Darth Vader just sitting down for dinner. Like, they open the door, and he's just sitting at the head of the table.
Yeah.
That is a great scene. And then Han's like, oh,
yeah.
And just, he has really good reflexes.
Well, he knew it was a setup. Han didn't. But I just love that scene. He opens the door and Vader's just chilling there at the end of the table. Like, yeah, that's what you do when you're a boss. You hang out and you make them come to you.
And then Boba Fett comes into the shot, basically just going like, hi, like, I did this to you.
Hey, everybody, I'm Boba Fett. Buy my toys. That's it.
Good to me, dead.
As an aside, since we aren't going to cover it, I do love that he gets, like, a whole special in a segment in the Star Wars Christmas holiday special, I should say. Because that was pretty much used just to introduce him, because they figured he was going to be a big part of the franchise.
Yeah, well,
doesn't it suck knowing that, like, that's where Boba Fett was introduced, the holiday special? Like,
I mean, he wasn't introduced there, but, you know, I mean, like,
he was.
Wasn't that Boba Fett's first appearance?
Yeah.
Did the holiday special come out before Empire Strikes Back?
Yeah.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah, that's what I said. They introduced him in that because they figured he was going to be a big part of the franchise.
Wow. Well,
yep.
He was something for about a movie and a half. Not even. And then he was killed. Not really.
No, he's alive. Yeah. He's alive. Do you want to talk about Boba Fett? Because I do.
Nope.
Oh, man.
So what happened next in this movie?
Well, okay, now a bunch of stuff starts colliding together.
Shit starts popping off, as the kids say.
Yes, because I'm not entirely sure if this is a trap or
it's a trap.
It's one of those weird Jazaku things. Because Luke sees that Han and they are
It's a weird logical thing. Sorry.
He sees that they're being tortured, so he breaks off his training in order to go rescue them. Now, I mean, you know that Vader's going to capture them, but was it something that Vader set up because he knew it would Ryuk there? Or...
Yes.
Okay.
That's exactly what it was. Because, like, when Han... So Han gets tortured, and Luke senses that Han is in, you know, severe pain, or that he's going to be. He's kind of foretelling the future. And Vader tortures Han, but when Han gets... After the torture takes place and Han returns to Chewie, he's like, they didn't even ask me any questions. So they were just torturing him to send the signal to Luke, you know, that his friend was being tortured. So, yeah, it was all set up.
Okay.
Because their whole point was they wanted to lure Luke there to capture him.
Okay, that's right. I knew that. I knew that much, but I wasn't sure. Like, I knew he saw them being tortured. I didn't know if Vader knew, like, okay, he's going to be able to sense this, so we have to do this for him to sense it, to draw him here.
Yeah, because there was no reason for them to torture him at all. Like, they didn't need anything from him. The only reason they tortured him was because that's how Luke would be able to sense it. But, So then Luke cuts short his training. And it's kind of weird, though, because... So you have Yoda and, you know, old Ben, and they're talking about how, you know, his training's not complete, and they tell him, you know, that you'll fail and all this stuff. But, he kind of fails, but... He's fine in the end.
Kind of fails? He does. He uses to fight Soundji and gets his hand cut off.
Yeah, but he gets...
In that scenario.
But he gets away and everybody's okay. I mean, you know.
He barely gets away.
He retreats and he almost dies.
Well, you know what? Almost dying, it doesn't count. So
it doesn't count as a kind of loses. He lost. He got his ass handed to him.
But anyways, the point I'm trying to make is is that Yoda and old Ben are all like, oh, you know, this is it, you know, and it's over, but don't worry, there's another. But there's another, meaning Leia, as we find out soon enough. But Leia doesn't ever really do anything.
That's what I was wondering. They say that there's another, but as far as I know, she never exhibits having any type of force power.
No.
Except communicating with Luke.
So Ben and freaking Kermit Yoda. The Frog were totally wrong, because they're all like, well, Luke's going to fail, but don't worry, we have Leia. Meanwhile, Leia doesn't do jack shit, and Luke kind of wins anyway, so they were just way off.
Well, I mean, maybe he will figure out in Episode 7 that there was actually a second Jedi, kind of like Neville in the Harry Potter series, where it's like nothing happens to him because Luke was around.
Or maybe, you know how, like, have you ever heard of, like, some people will be born with, like, a Siamese twin, like, inside them? Like, maybe...
Chimerism.
Yeah, maybe Luke or Leia has a chimerism, and there's a... Anyways, never mind. Forget I said anything.
But, yeah.
That's when, like, in like a fetus is absorbed by the other fetus and blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Sorry, I had to.
Is it weird that I think that's hilarious? God, that's terrible.
Yes.
But maybe there's a fetus with force powers.
Yeah, they also kind of mentioned that. They also kind of mentioned that he's taken the impulsive and quick route that his father did.
Yeah.
Which, not necessarily what I got when I watched the prequel trilogy, but...
Yeah, I mean, his father was just a complete dick, basically.
Yeah. I think that's one of the biggest feelings about the prequel trilogies. It's like nothing they said about Anakin really happens in the movies. He's just kind of a whiny teenager.
Yeah, he's a spoiled only child, basically, Anakin is. And Luke is, the reason he's leaving is, maybe it might not be the right thing to do, but he's doing it because, well, you know what, though? Now that I think about it, one of the main reasons why Anakin got so pissed and did wrong stuff was because he was trying to protect someone he cared about. And the reason Luke left there was because he was trying to protect someone he cared about. So I guess his motivations were kind of similar, but they're different people altogether. So.
I honestly think the biggest thing here, and we'll cover this when we talk about Return, is that it's actually Darth Vader who's trying to push him to be selfish and greedy and to give into his hate and anger. And it's literally him rebelling against his dad. It's like, no, I don't want to do that. So it's kind of, it's Anakin trying to get him to really do the same thing he did. And by forcing his hand, he pushes him in the other direction. I'm sure most parents can relate to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you said forcing his hand.
So speaking of, we do.
So Darth Vader would be Patrick Swayze.
Okay. In this. But Luke does end up on the planet, and he finds out it's a trap, which was it, too late by then.
Was it Demi Moore in that movie? I don't remember.
Anyhow, but, and then they have a pretty decent. Hasn't really aged that great for me. Fight between Darth Vader and Luke, which is rather intensive, but not that fast.
I really enjoyed that fight. Like, I mean, you know, obviously you have to consider like when this took place. This was in 83, so it's not like 80? You know, they didn't have, was it 80 or 80? I'm sorry, 80, 80. Yeah, 83 was episode 6. So, yeah, this took place in 1980, so there wasn't a whole lot of, like, special effects and action and stuff. And, I mean, there wasn't even the kind of, like, cinematic martial arts that we have nowadays, you know. Back in 1980, I mean, you know, everybody was doing freaking, like, as far as martial arts is concerned, everyone was doing, like, katas and crap like that, you know. So it was just...
And for all the crap you'll give them, when we get to the prequel trilogy, that is one thing they do have on the originals.
Yeah,
their fight sequences are a lot more action and kinetic because of the advancement in technology.
Yeah,
you know, like for all the hate it gets, a lot of people do like the final fight in the Phantom Menace.
Oh, for sure. I think it may. We'll discuss that when we get to it. But in this particular fight scene, I thought it was really cool. I thought I enjoyed specifically when Darth Vader knocks Luke into the pit that he's going to freeze him in carbonite in. And he just kind of, like, turns away to go to, like, hit the switch. And then you see Luke in the background just launch, like, use a force jump and just launch up out of the pit. And then Darth Vader is like, well, that was easy. And then Luke's up hanging from the ceiling. And he's like, what the? So, yeah, there were some cool scenes. And then later on, Darth Vader starts, like, launching stuff at him using, you know, yeah.
And that's
the force.
That was one of the reasons I mentioned the lightsaber earlier. I'm like, that wasn't something in the original, so they had to introduce it in this film for it to make sense in the climax.
Yeah.
I mean, they could have also just said that Darth Vader is so much stronger than Luke is, which is still true.
Well, you know what? That's something that I really enjoyed, too, is that a lot of the time in the battle, Darth Vader was just using one hand. You know, he's just using one hand. He was, like, casually parrying Luke's attacks. And then up until the very end when you saw him kind of – when Luke was moving out onto that bridge, you know, towards the end of the fight, and Darth Vader started using two hands and was just beating the crap out of Luke at that point. So
yeah,
it was just showing
that,
how
– Yeah, he just got angry. So, like, how dare you touch me? And
right. But up until that point, he was just kind of dealing with him at pretty much at ease, you know.
Yeah.
And
which
then,
is really Vader's style, because he's proven himself. Essentially, he wiped out the Jedi single-handedly. So
yeah.
He's used to fighting Jedi. That's just his thing.
You see, when you say that sounds badass. When we get to episode 3, it's him murdering a bunch of kids.
Yeah.
Well, and other Jedi.
Well, most of the other Jedis were taken out at the start of the Clone Wars.
Yeah.
Well, that's a lot of the Jedi who were serving as generals were taken out by the clones. But there were still a lot at the Jedi, the temple.
I mean, I guess. It was mostly younglings, though, from what I saw.
Showed the youngling part because
they didn't show the youngling part.
That one badass youngling.
Yeah.
How awesome was that kid?
The one who defended Bail Organa.
Yeah. I was like, yeah, go kid, you're awesome! And then he got killed, and I was like, oh, that sucks. I think, wasn't that kid supposed to be George Lucas' son or something?
Isn't that true?
I think I read that somewhere. We'll get to that. We keep jumping ahead to different movies. back to The Empire Strikes Back.
But,
the fight builds up to perhaps one of the most iconic scenes in cinematic history.
Obi-Wan never told you about your father. About your father.
I never told you the truth about your father.
The truth about your father.
Never told you.
He told me enough. He told me that you killed him. Yeah. He told me you killed him. No, I am your father.
His acting in that is a bit over the top.
I mean, is it? I don't know. I mean, when, how did you feel when you found out your father was a mass murderer?
I have not. Is this something you need to tell me, Tony?
Now, there's certain things you have to remember about this scene. There's only 4 people when they were filming it who knew what the line was, or those 5 people. That was James Earl Jones, Mark Hamill, George Lucas,
and Jesus, because he knows everything.
Jesus, and like the executive producer. So I guess it is 4, but nobody else knew. No one filming it, no one doing anything knew this. So
how funny would it be if like the cameraman's like, you know, he's like, I am your father, and all of a sudden you hear the cameraman from off screen like, oh shit. We gotta film that again. Take it from the top. Damn it, Bob.
Well, they didn't even tell the guy in the suit that.
Oh yeah, the actual actor who played Darth Vader.
Yeah, because normally he says the lines anyway. They just don't use it. But they told him something different, and so Mark Hamill had to react to lines that weren't being said. So I can understand why it might be a little, you know, a little dramatic.
Right. Dude, there are certain moments in time that I wish I could travel back to and observe. One of those moments is 1980, midnight, May 21st, in any movie theater in America, when this aired for the first time, and just witness the reaction of people when that line is dropped. Like, because at this point, no one knew at all. At all. Like, there was no... And just to be in that movie theater at that time, and to hear that he's his father, and you're like, what? Like, dude, I could imagine.
Yeah.
That would be awesome. I would want to, like, travel back in time, though, to, like, a really, really ghetto movie theater. Because, you know, whenever you go to those, you just hear people, like, yelling out stuff. And then, like, I am your father. And you just hear, oh, shit! I'm like, yeah, that'd be awesome. That's what I want to do.
No, but...
There's a movie theater
if I have
in town.
Kids,
that's great.
If I have kids, they're not finding out Darth Vader's Luke's father until they watch the movie for the first time and are filming that reaction.
There are several, like, YouTube videos of parents showing that scene to their kids for the first time, and like the kids just like freaking out and stuff. Like you can definitely YouTube that. And there's tons of clips.
Oh, I'm going to later.
Yeah, it's awesome. I can't imagine. Like I feel like I've always known that he was his father. So, like, you know, I never got to experience that shock.
Yeah. Same. You know, I'm the same way. Like, I totally, yeah. Like, I don't remember a time before knowing everything about Star Wars. Like, I just always have.
Right, or especially that particular bit of information, because that's just, it's become just part of the zeitgeist, you know, it's just common knowledge. So, kind of like, it's like how everyone knows about that scene in Ghost Dad. It's just common knowledge.
Everyone knows about it.
Everybody knows.
I didn't even know what Ghost Dad was until this podcast, so.
You know what? Don't watch it. Just don't.
Oh, God, it's so bad. Don't watch it.
It's like, I don't know why I watched it, but
I don't
really
know either.
Bad.
Yeah, I think I had it on VHS back in the day.
Enough about Ghost Dad. It's
the worst side of Bill Cosby, even in light of what's.
Anyhow, before you both get me in any more trouble.
It's the worst side of Bill Cosby.
We're moving on.
I'm sorry.
Okay. I'm alright.
This is something I never get, because Star Wars isn't the only one guilty of this. A lot of people have. It's when you cut off somebody's hand, because 9 out of 10 times, you don't really do anything with it except put a prosthetic hand on so they can keep their hand anyhow.
Right.
It's like, you do it, and then you realize, like, the person's going to have the hand. They actually cut it off. So we're going to have to give them...
Yeah.
And, usually, more often than not, it's usually just giving the person a black glove to cover their hand.
For sure. How cheesy was the effect when they cut his hand off? It looked like, you know how when you do that thumb trick where it makes it look like you're taking the thumb off your hand? It was like that. Yeah. It was like, where's my hand? It's in my sleeve. It's like, we can see it in your sleeve, dude.
Yeah, it was. It's whatever. But it, again, you know, going back to what we were saying before, it does leave the hero soundly defeated. I mean, he is really dearmed in this case.
Disarmed.
Yes, we talked about...
You know what, that pun was worse than anything Bill Cosby has ever done.
Moving on. Moving on.
Including Ghost Dad.
We mentioned what happened on Luke and Vader, but while this is going on, Leia, Han, Lando, C-3PO, Chewbacca, and stuff are dealing with the people on the ground. Han is already frozen in carbonite and being sent off to Jabba the Hutt.
Dropping another epic line. I love you, I know. Yeah.
We said you skipped over one of my favorite, which is "Don't ever tell me the odds."
Oh yeah, yeah. So the odds of getting out of an asteroid field. Don't ever tell me the odds. Another fun thing about him being frozen in carbonite: when he goes in to get frozen, his hands are bound in front of him, and then in the carbonite, his hands are both up by his head, unbound. And I'm like, that doesn't make any sense.
It could be that the ropes froze and he tried to free himself.
Okay.
At this point, I'm just going with whatever the movie offers, because there's a lot of weird logic in this franchise. But whatever.
Sure that Harrison Ford was going to want to be in any sequels. So they were just like, yeah, he could probably die. Who cares?
Well, he wanted to die.
So did they intend to kill him off here?
No. But I know that Harrison Ford said that he did wanted Han Solo to be killed in one of the films. I don't know if it was this one though, but there was certainly a thing about him wanting to be killed
in 7.
It might. It very well might.
That'd be interesting.
I'm almost 100% certain that Chewbacca will die in 7.
Will he get a moon thrown at him? Because that's what happens in the books.
No, I know. How badass is that though?
That's what it took to kill Chewbacca in the books.
That's so. So badass.
I don't even want to know what that means, but...
It means exactly what he said.
I mean, you don't say he got a moon thrown at him.
No.
I think it's like an everyday occurrence.
No, I'll... I'll go into more detail after the podcast because it's a decent story. So
okay,
yeah,
but doesn't yeah. pertain, especially since it falls under the legends yeah. category of canon.
Yeah, it's not even canon anymore.
Yeah,
but
yeah, the twins aren't canon. How stupid is that? Oh well, anyways.
That's dumb.
But yeah, they escape on the Millennium Falcon, and this is when Nuke and they introduce the connection between the two of them, where she's able to hear his telepathy and find him while he's kind of lost the fight, while he's dangling from the ship.
He strategically escaped the battlefield. He cut his losses.
Yes, he cut more than his losses. His tactical retreat, I'm sure.
His tactical retreat.
Actually, I think he was going down there to get his hand back.
He was like, no, my hand! And then, you know, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So once he kind of lost the fight and got picked up, then he speaks with Ghost Dad. He speaks with Ghost Mentor. Obi-Wan.
Could you imagine if Bill Cosby played Obi-Wan in this movie?
Who confirms that, yes, Darth Vader is his father.
Right.
And Han, Mando and Chewbacca take the Millennium Falcon to try to find Han. And
yeah.
The movie just kind of ends there. It kind of ends with the heroes defeated. One's missing a hand, one's frozen, presumed dead. And there's really no positive for them at the end of this film. There's no hope.
There's no.
They need
new
a new hope.
Hope.
We both
wrong sequel
at the same time.
Wrong sequel. Well, not even sequel, it's the original. So yeah, that's Empire Strikes Back.
So here's a question. Luke goes to Bespin with the intention right. of saving Han and Leia. Right?
Okay. Yeah.
When he gets to Bespin, Han's already frozen, but Leia is escaping. With, Orlando. So Luke gets there and really doesn't do anything at all to help them.
Nope. He gets screamed at that it's a trap and then ignores it.
He goes all the way there to get his ass kicked and doesn't help anyone do anything.
Well, I mean, I think that's part of the lesson is because if he had stayed to train, he would have been better prepared to take on this encounter. He's thinking with his heart and not necessarily with his head.
Yeah.
And his friends actually might have been okay. Because Han might not have even been frozen in carbonite. Because if...
They would have kept torturing him?
They would have either kept torturing him or kept him in prison. Because the only reason they really did anything is because they're like, oh... We know Luke's on the way now. Oh, well, we got to test a way to capture him. Oh, let's test it on Han.
Well, no. So here, okay. So I guess that, okay. My logic, I guess, doesn't make a whole lot of sense because the reason they tortured him was to get him to come. So let's say they torture him and he doesn't show. Then what do? Probably just ice him or whatever. And by ice, I mean kill, not freeze. But I guess they could do that too.
Well,
no, they wouldn't need to. So, yeah, so maybe he had to go, otherwise they may have just killed Han and Leia. And they're like, alright, well, Luke's not coming. We don't need these people anymore. And then just kill them. So maybe he had to go so that they would be kept alive long enough so that they could escape.
I mean, ultimately, it all, everything
even
falls
he,
into
even
where it's supposed to.
Yeah, you know? But even then, he didn't have to fight Darth Vader.
No, he didn't have to, and he shouldn't have, which he proved that he shouldn't have.
Yeah. Very interesting.
Yeah, but it's, like I was saying before, it may not be the best Star Wars movie, and I don't know, I don't know which one's the best yet, so I'm, you know, that's an actual may from me, but it's definitely my favorite because... You know, like I say, it's because, oh, the Empire wins and I'm evil. Well, I am, but I really do enjoy.
Not that he's a big teddy bear. He's like a Chewbacca. So adorable.
No, not really. But I do.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. I just enjoy. I hate watching movies that just it's all good or like something bad happens, but it's for like a minute.
Yeah, you know how it's gonna end.
Yeah, and like nothing bad happens to any character because, like, the movies where only secondary characters die, you know, like you get introduced to a new character and it's like, well, they're dead because no one else can die, so, or like lose a hand or something bad happened to them. So I like the struggle and I like how the movie proves it's like, hey, the Empire, when they strike back hard. It's like they're a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, and that is a good part. I think you know, especially being that we get trilogies, but a lot of them aren't planned as trilogies, so they kind of stretch out like a simple concept. Looking at you, Matrix. It's rare that you kind of get hero, because you don't necessarily want people to leave the theater upset and disappointed that the heroes got squashed so badly. But at the same time, your villains do need to have stakes where they feel like they are potentially, you know, they are a huge potential threat. Like, there's a reason they need to be stopped. And I don't want to bring this up too much, but we did talk about this kind of with the Marvel series we did, and like a lot of the villains weren't threatening because they were never really given anything, any sort of win.
It's a good point.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
And especially with this movie, the Empire after A New Hope was basically seen as, well, they suck. Like, they had that big ship and it took only 2 proton torpedoes to take it out, and they probably lost. And they just had to prove in this movie, it's like, no, the Empire didn't lose. Far from it. They're just as powerful as ever. They just don't have the Death Star anymore. Because up until like the 15 minutes before that they had the Death Star, they were still the most powerful force in the galaxy. And even after losing the second Death Star, they're still a force to be reckoned with, and it takes a while for the Rebel Alliance to fold the Empire back.
Well, even then, and this movie doesn't touch on it as much, but in A New Hope, they do kind of mention that it's not even that the Empire has such a strong and demanding presence, which they do. It's also that they have the support of the people. Most people aren't against them, or most people don't want to be against them, which is why you have a small contingency of the Rebel Alliance. And that was part of the reason for them part of the reason for the entire first movie was them preventing these plans from getting out, because if people found a weakness, they can exploit it. And that's what they were trying to avoid. So it does still seem like they have the support of most people in this film. It's just not touched on as much.
Yeah. But I mean, like, the Empire, unless you're an alien, the Empire really doesn't care what you do.
As I was going to say, most people are aliens in this franchise.
A lot of people are, but the Empire is, for a galaxy filled with so many aliens, the Empire is really xenophobic.
Yeah, you know what, I've heard that too. So I don't know if they're...
It's a lot of information pulled from the books, though, so I don't know if I've heard it is. But notice you don't see any alien Imperial like commanders or admirals. The only time you see aliens in a like an Imperial ship is the bounty hunters. And there's like, it's just like Bosk and like a robot and then 2 weird things. And the Empire hates them. Possibly because they're bounty hunters, but also possibly because they're aliens. So it just makes the Empire out even more evil because they're like racists.
Yeah, or speciists.
Speciists. Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, I think we pretty much covered everything there is to cover in this movie. So, I don't know.
is, so this is Tony's point.
What's that?
This is your time to shine now. This is when you ask us, what do we give this movie out of
4? Oh, okay, yeah. So, do you guys, what would you guys give Ghost Dad? I'm just kidding. Star Wars Episode 5, Empire Strikes Back, out of 5. Go ahead and rate it for me. And, I guess if you want to, rank it amongst your favorite Star Wars movies thus far, even though we already know.
I've seen 2 of them. That's right.
Yeah. Well, and we already know, especially with Scott, that this is your favorite one, so that's not really
it's
news.
Ranked number 1, and thus I give it a 5 out of 5.
Okay.
I forget what I gave A New Hope. I think I gave it a 4.
You gave it a 4, yeah. Or
and 4.5. I'm pretty much giving this a 4 as well. I prefer A New Hope just because I feel like it has a lot more forward momentum. But this movie has better stakes, and the action is much better in this one, too. I'm not a huge fan of, I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of the final fight, like the one-on-one, but the Battle of Hoth, not necessarily the asteroid field stuff, but the stuff with the Millennium Falcon around that, like him docking underneath the ship is kind of fun and clever.
Yeah,
and the battle on the battle in the Cloud City outside of Luke and Darth Vader, and you know it's still a decent fight, and of course it still has one of you know like I knew the twist, and it still is an impactful twist. It's an impactful twist no matter how many times you've seen this film.
Oh, for sure, yeah. When I watch it, like I try to put myself in that mental state of like shock when I hear him say that, just to see, you know, I don't know, maybe I'm a weirdo, but like it's kind of an exercise in acting, I guess, where I'm like, I try to put myself in the scene and all that, to where it's like, how would I feel if I was seeing this for the first time? So,
see, yeah. For me, the enjoyment of watching it repeatedly after knowing the twist is it's like a good murder mystery. If you can go back and rewatch and make, okay, they dropped this hint, and this makes more sense in hindsight. And for the most part, and I could be wrong, most of what they say remains consistent between the first and second movie with this reveal. It's a lot of people double speaking, but they aren't lying. They are from their perspective, they're looking at it like, yes, Darth Vader did kill your father, but not in the traditional sense of Anakin dead. Anakin no longer exists.
Which Ghost Dad Kenobi explains in episode 6. I didn't really lie to you.
Okay.
So tell me.
Yes. So I gave A New Hope a 5 out of 5. I thought it was, pretty much flawless. And definitely to me so far, even though we've only watched 2 of them, episode 4 was definitely the most structurally cohesive and was the best standalone movie. Episode 5, I enjoy. I think it has way more action, great set pieces, clearly some excellent character developments as far as, you know, we learn a whole lot more about about the cast, of characters. I expressed my, lack of enjoyment for the kind of the middle part of the film where it just slumped for a period of time. And, you know, there is, to me at least, the idea that this movie is not complete in and of itself. So, weighing it critically and not so much necessarily as much as quote, fun, I'm not weighing it on a scale of how fun is this movie. I'm weighing it on a scale of how critically good is this film. I still think it's very, very good. Not perfect. I would have to give it 4.5 out of 5.
Okay. So that will do it for Star Wars Episode 5, The Empire Strikes Back. And as they say, it seems like we're going from first to worst as we go from what is probably considered the best film in the franchise to one that may not be considered the worst film in the franchise.
Oh, no, it is.
It's considered the most useless film in the franchise.
As no, new, it's the worst.
As a new threat sweeps the nation and a Phantom Menace approaches.
Obi-Wan never told you what happened to your father.
He told me enough. He told me you killed him.
No, I am your father.